This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
7:17 in the morning, you're listening to The Morning Run with Shazana Chuang and Chen Li. In the meantime, we turn to the question of internet censorship. Now, yesterday, graphic artist Fahmi Reza was charged in court for a satirical post on social media that he made last year, which allegedly insulted the former health minister, Datuk Dr. Adam Baba. This case is part of a broader discussion on how online content is being policed or censored.
Separately, big tech platforms have come under intense scrutiny over the past few years for the way they handle harmful content. The most recent example is the furor towards Joe Rogan and Spotify for providing a platform for dubious science and showcasing a pattern for racist language.
So the question that we're asking this morning is, how should we balance the right to access to information and freedom of expression with the duty to prevent misinformation and hate speech and other harmful content? So joining us on the line to discuss this is Gayatri Venkateswaran, Assistant Professor at the University of Nottingham, Malaysia. Gayatri, good morning. Always good to have you. Now, the case of Joe Rogan and Spotify exemplifies the complexities of access to information in the age of the internet. I want to ask you, do you think internet censorship is ever warranted?
Yes, I think that there is a strong justification that can be made. I guess the question arises because there is an assumption that if one considers freedom of expression or free speech, that one automatically rejects any kind of, I wouldn't use the word censorship, but regulation, right? So I think taking on from your question, I won't say yes to censorship, but I think yes to thinking about possibly content that could have very serious repercussions, unwanted repercussions. Examples could be hate speech, right? One of the most severe consequences. So no to censorship, because censorship itself, you know, it demands for a kind of an arbitrary decision-making. And it has always favored those in power, narrow interest groups, rather than the sort of public interest. But I think there is a case to make for somewhat of a regulation. And often it is self-regulation, because we do have, you know, users on all these platforms, right? We're talking about TikTok, we're talking about Spotify. You know, they come from a variety of backgrounds, and some are in a position where they can be put into further a disadvantageous position. And so it is important for us to make sure that the platforms don't deny people their rights and access, but at the same time also allow people to express themselves, their identities, and not be, you know, sort of kicked out or made to feel as though they don't belong in the space.
Yeah, so Gayatri, how should we balance between the right to access information and freedom of expression with a duty to prevent the harm of misinformation and hate speech?
I'll say very generally, but there's a lot more to unpack from international standards. The Universal Declaration of Human Rights, the International Covenant on Civil and Political Rights, that actually puts it quite clearly, you know, there is freedom of expression, but here are grounds that are legitimate, but you must go through all these tests it has to be very rigorous Tesla. So it's not, you know, someone's whims and fancies, I don't like this, so therefore we should censor the internet. We need to think about what are the legal backings actually for some of the things that we are concerned about. So we are concerned about misinformation, more so disinformation, yeah? More than misinformation, it is disinformation. And we actually do need somewhat of a legal framework. And to have a legal framework, we do need to come to legislators, we do need the government. So I won't say exclude the government entirely. They have a leadership role to play, but they cannot be the one who arbitrate this decision solely, you know? So I think when you talk about internet regulation, we definitely would want for a much more multi-stakeholder base. I think, you know, people think of balance like 50%, 50%, 50% free speech, and then 50%, yeah, it's okay to censor something. And it doesn't work that way, right? Because societies change. What was okay even 20, 30 years ago is not acceptable in society today, for example. So that continuous discussion and debate needs to happen to say, what do we as society uphold as values? We don't want, for example, the kind of sexism, the misogyny. We don't want that because it promotes hatred, right? It can lead to people being excluded, targeted, and possibly even being attacked as well physically. So there is a line, you know? But to be able to say that, we must have that debate. And we don't want someone in office in you know, located in some government building to tell us that. it is something that we need to actually engage very, very actively.
One of the major dilemmas of the internet age is who bears the onus to police online content? Should this burden fall on governments or platforms themselves?
Certainly, everybody does have a role. You know, our lives are very highly mediated. We are all on different platforms in one way or another. We are also creating content ourselves, even if we are not necessarily the, you know, the big companies. So at each level, there are different kinds or different expectations of responsibility, right? So when you have governments, governments are elected. There is a much wider interest in terms of the public good, making sure there's public good, which is access to information. So if you take the COVID as an example, I can say that, I mean, in my judgment of how information has been put out about the COVID vaccination and things like that, I think the government has failed to try and counter a lot of the misinformation. Yeah, they talk a lot about taking action against people, but they themselves have failed to use whatever available spaces to counter misinformation. I think there is a very valid role for authorities, especially dealing with a crisis like this, as a public health crisis, to actually counter misinformation because they actually have the information, you know, to be shared. And there are individuals who've maybe crossed the lines and affected, you know, people's decision making, maybe could be harmful. And I think there is a need to use some kind of sanction. I don't agree with jail sanction, but maybe a penalty, yeah? Or to say, look, you know, you have to apologize or retract or something like that. And this is the correct information instead, yeah?
Gayatri, I want to bring our attention to tech platforms and the kind of responsibilities that they are seen to must sort of shoulder. One of the challenges in regulating tech platforms is the cross-border nature of social media. I mean, what do you make of how different governments have engaged tech platforms to tackle contentious content, such as in India or Nigeria?
Okay, so there are two sides to it. One, actually, there's a good thing to have them somewhere else because then they are not necessarily bound by pretty bad laws in some countries. Because we know that when it comes to free speech, when it comes to civil and political rights, that many countries do not meet some of this international standard. So I think it's okay that they don't necessarily exist in all of these places because for them to be bound by some of these national laws actually could be counterproductive for what we would like to see, which is a much bigger space, freer space and all that. So that's one side to it. But on the other hand, I agree that these companies actually relate to governments very differently. And one of the prime motives is the markets. Yeah, who has a big market? Where are they interested to exist in terms of the market share? So clearly, they are much more interested in engaging with governments where they see their potential, the market, right? And so between, you gave examples of India and Nigeria, between India and Malaysia, India is far more important for them to engage, have an office, have the constant engagement with the government, than they are possibly with Malaysia. Who are we in that scheme of things, you know? And the other point that also makes it very challenging is that by not being in all places, they are possibly also, in a way, allowing for some of the abuses to take place because they have no local contacts, they have no moderators who are able to immediately capture, for example, when there is growing, say, xenophobia on a particular issue or something, you know. So by not being present in many of these places where we see the kind of tensions happening also means that their platform is enabling, right, some of the harmful content.
Yeah, so Gayatri, bringing this issue home, our activist Fahmy Reza was charged yesterday for posting online satire. So what are the concerns with how contentious content is being treated under Malaysian laws?
The threshold is so low. That is my major concern. And I think that's the sort of position that civil society actors have taken here, that the threshold is so low with regards to what is considered to be problematic. And it is very, very clear in a lot of the cases where investigations have begun, court cases have begun, with regards to online content, that, you know, there are very, very few people who might benefit from silencing the critiques, right? It's a power issue, without any doubt. Often, the cases, the actions, the sanctions are not in public interest. It is seen as stifling concerns that have been expressed by the public because, you know, satire, art, All these are, in fact, ways in which people are expressing themselves about current issues, right? You know, we've seen actually cases where people are saying, hey, there are all these other content that's causing so much of confusion about the vaccines or the booster, but nobody's taking any action, right? When you know very well that you need to stem that kind of content, not jail the person, but stem the content and clarify. But instead, what we see is criticisms of the government, criticisms of institutions continue to be the target of police actions and court actions. So the bar is extremely low in terms of how we interpret the boundaries of free speech or where legitimate limitations can actually be imposed. So that has always been, a call to the government, right, to amend the laws that we have so that it allows for much more freedom of expression.
Gayatri, thanks very much for speaking to us this morning. That was Gayatri Venkateswaran, Assistant Professor at the University of Nottingham, Malaysia, giving us a lot of food for thought on this issue on how best to regulate online content and that really thin line between trying to balance your freedom of expression and also trying to prevent harms. I think the case of Fahmi Reza has captured a lot of attention, and he's one of those, I would say, an icon almost, because he's been the subject of so many police investigations throughout this pandemic. I think this latest case against him kind of proves his point of what he's trying to say.
Yeah, I mean, we in the media world, as practitioners, we want nothing more than an unadulterated platform to basically say anything. Because at the end of the day, a conversation is just a conversation. It's an interplay of ideas, contrasting and non-contrasting. And then from there, some kind of constructive approach can be taken to any dilemma, right? Whether it's any of the subject matters. But the things, we don't have that anymore.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.